Welcome to the Texas Wine Scene Podcast, the most up-to-date information to help you prepare for your wine tasting weekend. I'm Mike, your Texas Wine Scene correspondent, bringing you all the wine happenings in and around the great state of Texas, from the high plains to the hill country. If you love Texas wine, you've come to the right place. Let's take a trip. Your Texas Wine Scene correspondent, Mike Cole, bringing you all the wine happenings in and around the great state of Texas. Today, we have a very special guest interview and one that I've been looking forward to for a long time. But before we get into that interview, I would like to mention a few wine events happening on the Texas Wine Scene. The Valentine's Wine Trail is starting this Saturday, February 1st through March 2nd. So head on out and enjoy three tastes of wine at each of the 40 participating wineries. It's a great way to explore and enjoy wines from the North Texas wine country. The Texas Hill Country Wineries is having their Wine Lover Celebration Passport event from January 27th to February 21st. They will also have complimentary tastings at each of their 40 different Hill Country wineries, including a 15% discount on three bottle purchases. So pick up your passport at TexasHillCountryWineries.org. Speaking of wine lover celebrations, you might want to go ahead and make your Valentine's Day dinner reservations at one of your favorite wineries. We are only a short 2 weeks away and reservations are booking up fast. A few notable wineries that are having their Valentine's Day dinners include William Chris Vineyards in High Texas, Becker Vineyards in Stonewall, Messina Hoff Winery in Richmond, Texas, Landon Winery in Wiley, and 12 Buyers Winery in Johnson City. Okay, my guest today is a Texas wine insider, an entrepreneur, a wine judge, and founder of the Texas Wine Lover website and the Texas Wine Lover mobile app. Welcome to the show, Jeff Cope. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Good. Thanks for joining me. Jeff, I've been looking forward to getting you on the podcast for quite some time. We've run into each other a few times out there on the Texas wine scene at local events, doing some judging, which we'll get into a lot of that stuff later on. But I really do thank you for taking the time to meet with us here on the Texas wine scene.
I'm glad to be here.
So let's get into a little bit about yourself, Jeff. Can you tell us a little bit about you and where you're from?
So actually I've been in Texas now for 30 years, so I'll just consider myself a Texan and just leave it at that. But I was always in the computer industry. So, working with software and creating a couple websites. But I never drank like wine seriously.
Okay.
And then I met someone and then in 2010, I made the mistake, I guess you'd say, saying, hey, there's wineries out in Fredericksburg. Do you want to go visit? And so I've been doing this now for 15 years.
Okay.
And that was pretty much my start to the journey into wine for my nighttime while I still had that day job.
Okay. So you hit one of the wineries up, is it like maybe in Fredericksburg or one of those places, and then got a taste of it and then started kind of popping on down the trail and tasting out a few different wineries?
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. It was on a weekend. Actually, it was January 1st weekend. And, visited a number of wineries, and actually on the way out, visited the winery, and they told us about this Texas Wine Passport program that they had back then.
Okay.
And where every winery you go to, you get a stamp, and the more stamps you collected for the different wineries you visited, you could then return them in for like rewards. And so I was like, oh, this is great. And it's like a frequent flyer club.
Yeah.
So started just visiting a ton of wineries just to collect more rewards and having fun. And
okay. Now, did you stay in the Fredericksburg area, or once you got a taste of what the wineries were serving and you say, you know what, maybe I'll go to a different area or, you know, try some different wineries. Did you do it like that, or you just kind of start drinking more at home and then realizing that there was other areas that we can explore?
Well, yeah. So I was living in Houston at the time.
Okay.
And so coming to the Hill Country, that was always a 3-hour trip anyways.
Oh, yeah.
So I was like, okay, from the Houston, okay, where I, if I go north 3 hours, where do I go? You know, so I that way I could end up in North Texas, getting some of the wineries there, or East Texas, and that way. So yeah, pretty much started visiting all over the state at that time.
Okay. Was there many wineries in the Houston area at that time? I know there's a few over there now. I haven't gotten the opportunity to taste very many wineries over there. Is there any that you know about that might have been going on back in those days?
So back then, yeah, there was a handful.
Okay.
I mean, one of the closest best wineries at that time was, of course, Messina Hoff, that was in Bryan College Station.
Yeah.
And that was only like an hour or so from Houston, so that wasn't too bad.
That wasn't too bad. You can get up there and taste some good wines.
Exactly.
Messina Hoff has been around for a long time. They got a pretty good pedigree. And I'm looking forward to getting over to taste some wines at Messina Hoff over there with Paul and in the gang. So, yeah, that's pretty cool. Tell us a little bit about the Texas Wine Lover website. I know that's your brainchild. It's pretty cool. If I know a lot of our listeners out there may know, but for the ones who don't know about the Texas Wine Lover website and the app, can you give us a little bit of background of where that idea came from, why you decided to develop something like that? Let us know how that transpired.
Yeah. So, way back when we started visiting all those wineries, I had actually previously written a book. So I said, okay, I can write. Well, I can't tell you really what I'm tasting or smelling in a glass of wine, but I can certainly tell you about the wineries we visited.
Yeah.
So I said, blogs were starting to get popular, and I said, well, let me start a blog. So that's what created the Texas Wine Lover website, which was just a blog at the beginning. That was in 2011.
Okay.
And just from that point on, it just kept adding more things to it. Like, well, we don't know how many grapes of acres of vineyards there are here, so let me try to collect that information. So I started doing that. Actually, so we still don't know actually the actual number.
Right.
Just the website just became like a resource for a whole bunch of information. And then I think it was one trip, because like I said, whenever I went to the Hill Country, it was a few-hour trip, so it actually was a trip where I needed to figure out where to stay and all that.
Yep.
And then one time I went by myself, and I was out, happened to be on a Monday. I was like, well, I got some time, but let me go visit some wineries. It's like, well, I don't even know who's open. So that would have been a hassle trying to like figure out every winery that might have been around there and what their opening hours were.
Okay.
So I said, there needs to be an app to do this. So that's when the brain clicked in and said, I need to do this. So
wow. Now, were you working on the blog by yourself, or did you have some contributors at that time to give you some information to add to the blog? So you kind of... You mentioned it might have been getting a little bit bigger, and then more information. It seems like it's a pretty big project for someone solo to take on by themselves.
Yeah, so at the beginning, everything was myself. And then I think it was 2015, that's when I started getting some other contributors that would help write about wineries and other wine-related posts. And that's continued to this day. We have like over 10 different writers that can write. So that helps for a lot.
Okay, and they're covering different regions based on their locales, how that works?
Yeah, I tried to find somebody like in every major region, basically. Okay. So if something was happening in, say, Dallas, someone could cover that. Or in the High Plains, someone could cover that. So yeah, that was the goal.
Okay.
Still trying that, but that's not always working well.
I understand. Well, Texas is a big state, and I think it's important that we kind of get a few of these areas covered, because I know you can't be at all of them at one time, but having some assistance in the different areas, I'm sure will work out great. How did the app either spin off from the website? How did that work? Can you give us a little bit of background on that?
Yeah, that was a challenge actually.
Okay.
Like I said, my previous day job was always in computer software. So the last job I actually had was a software program manager, which was managing like the test areas for some testing some software or either the development of the software. So I said, well, okay, I got this concept. I know what I can do. I can manage it. And so then I created a workflow and everything. This is what it should look like. And mm-hmm. I tried to find a developer that actually could do it.
Okay.
Started working with the company, and it got to about the point of about 80% done. And I said, they're just not going to be able to do this, because it's just not turning my requests for changes into the fixes.
Okay. Okay.
So I canceled that and then started all over again. I don't know why. It's like,
oh, that's a big project.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing too. I mean, because all this money is coming out of my pocket and I'm going, wow, do I stop? Do I continue? I said, all right, well, let's just try again. And thankfully with that effort, then that got the final result that you see today. Okay. I mean, the information is actually entered on the website by wineries or other businesses that are in the app.
Okay.
And then the information from the website flows into the app.
Okay. I don't know how apps are built or how that works. What I do imagine is there's kind of like the bones of the app, how you want it to lay out. And then do you have the software company just kind of plug in, you know, the different features of what you want the app to look like? How does the logistics of building an app work?
Well, I can tell you about the first effort that I did.
Okay.
But as far as what it is now, I actually came across this company that they produce an app, but if primarily they market it to like cities, tourism bureaus, convention centers, that type of thing, where they can have an app for their city.
Okay.
To then have people find out where what's going on in the city and the events and the different businesses. The ironic thing is actually when I first started trying to design my own at the very beginning, I came across one version of their app that was used by another state. And I took some of those ideas and I said, oh, those are good.
Okay.
And then but I could never figure out who actually produced it.
Okay.
And so then I finally was able to figure that out. And it's like, okay, this is going to work. So started working with them. Yeah. And you're basically identifying, okay, these are the menus I need. This is the information I need on each of the categories or the menus. And this is the information that's going to be sent to you. Then make it happen.
Okay. Now, is it a constantly evolving project? So every time you feel, or if there's something new comes up and you want to implement that either into the website or the app, particularly the app, is it pretty much a plug and play situation where you can either call a developer and say, hey, I need this new drop down box, or I need this new menu, plug that in and it can be ready to go that next week?
No,
it's not that easy. Okay.
Yeah. So in this case, like I said, they work with a lot of different cities and everything. So they've got this template, the core software that then has to drive all the other ones. You know, so if I make a change, it's going to affect the other versions of their app in the different cities.
Oh, okay. Okay. I see. Now, can you tell our listeners, you know, briefly about what's on the app presently? What are some menu options, some things they might want to go to find some good information so they can either plan or try to navigate their wine journey?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, besides the list of wineries that's in all of Texas that's on the app, so the next menu item actually is wines. I don't think people have figured out exactly that one yet. But if you go there and the winery that has their listing, if they're editing it themselves, they can enter what actual wines or wine varietals they actually have. So like, okay, if you're looking for, I'm on a Sagrantino, who actually sells a Sagrantino? You should be able to pull that up right from the wines menu. Or nice. Not even just a specific varietal, but I just want rosés. Who has rosés? You know,
okay,
that type of stuff. And then the other category, the other menus / categories are items, because for instance, when I lived in Houston, when I created this, you know, if I'm going to the Hill Country, I'm going to need a place to stay and a place to eat and shop or whatever else. So there's actually those categories that are available. And pretty much any of those local businesses that are around the wineries can be added to the app too.
Awesome.
Yeah. And then the one menu item that I'm thinking is really going to be very important, especially for wineries, is events. Which actually, I think you know a little bit
about. I do know a little bit about that.
So the wineries that actually have claimed the listings and then they have total right to edit it in whatever they want, they can add their own events to there. So if you went to the website and looks like, say, a listing for a winery, you'll see the events that they've added. But the cool thing is there's actually a on the website, there's a list of consolidated events from all the different wineries that have entered. So you can see, okay, coming up, these are all the events. Gotcha. And there's actually a calendar view too, that if you want to look by calendar, date, you can do that. And then in the app is that consolidated list of events too. So it's really handy to look through to figure out what you might want to attend in the future.
Absolutely.
And then the beautiful thing, the final thing that pulls it all together is, see, on the website, it's called Plan Your Visit and Plan Your Trip. Sorry.
Okay.
And same thing, it's in the app too, where you figured out what wineries you want to go to, what businesses you want to stay at or eat, and then what events you want to attend. You can actually add those to your own custom trip in the app.
Wow.
Or the website. So you can create your trip, reorganize it in the order that you want to go. Let's say you're on the website doing it. It's kind of nice because you have a bigger screen to work with. Plan your trip there. And then when you're done and you're ready to go on the trip, you just take your phone with you. And it's got that information that you did on the website. Well, now it's on your phone too. And it'll even give you directions if you wanted it.
Well, that's like a one-stop shop, plan it all right there in the palm of your hand, and head on out to the wine country and enjoy your afternoon.
Exactly.
That sounds fantastic. You mentioned the events page on there, which I think is absolutely fantastic. And I'm on there all the time, kind of getting that planned out, viewpoint in terms of, what's coming up over the next, month or two down the road, because, time seems to be moving fast. And when you think you just kind of went to one event, this weekend, and all of a sudden there's another big wine event that's happening in Houston or that's happening in Dallas. And when I can get on there and see the projections out that these are the events that are coming up, that sure helps me in my part of this industry in terms of getting out all the information about Texas wine events.
Yeah, I mean, there's another item I failed to mention. This menu item is called services.
Okay.
Because obviously, besides us, trying to help the Texas wine industry, there's other services, and so in that thing are businesses like tour companies, wine education, marketing, social media. So all those type of listings are there too. So that.
Okay, that's pretty cool, and I know as the wineries come online, if they can get on there, and we can try to encourage them to. What do they do in terms of I think you mentioned they claim their listing. How does that work?
Yeah, so for wineries particularly, I have to have the list of the wine. Here's all the wineries. So from there, they can go look at their listing, and then if they haven't claimed it yet, they can see there's a little words there. Say, well, go ahead and claim this if you're this winery. And then once they do that, they create an account. And then at that point, pretty much it's theirs to update whenever they want with whatever they need. Okay. So they just log in and they got nice form information to be able to fill out to, say the type of wines they have or particularly their hours and days are open, which would have helped me back in that day when I was in Fredericksburg.
Right.
That type of stuff. So, so once they claim their listing, it's theirs to edit. And, if they remember to edit, that's great.
And you don't have to go in there and hit a magic button to go submit and it'll pop up on the website. It's all in their hands to do and edit how they feel and how they want.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, as soon as they make a change on the website where they're editing it, it's live right there on the website. And I think it's like an hour delay before it might show up in the app.
Okay. About how many wineries do you think that are have claimed their listing on the website? Do you have any idea about that number or an approximation possibly?
So right now we list 525 test wineries and tasting rooms. I list them both.
Okay.
Because there's always a debate how many wineries there are because do they produce wine or are they just are they using custom crush, whatever the case. So I list both tasting rooms and wineries, 525. So out of those, I think about 60% have claimed the listings.
Okay. Speaking of that, it seems like that information, particularly wineries, vineyards that are just having a bonded, license or certification, it seems like that information is very difficult to obtain. Do you have any industry behind the scenes or why that would be? Why is it so difficult for us to get very good, solid numbers on the Texas wine industry, wineries or vineyards? Why is that tough?
If I knew why it was tough, I'd know the answer, wouldn't you?
Well, you know,
or would I want to share that answer? I mean, the only thing we really have to go by that I'm aware of is the winery G permits. And as we know, that's not really valid because you can have, I don't even know what the latest number is. I think you pulled it.
The latest number from CTB in terms of, they're calling bonded wine producers, and this is as of January 8th, there is 1,021 bonded wine producers. Now, there was a post that came out on Facebook, and there's a lot of interesting and very colorful feedback on of the number that was put out in September, which is 1,174. This information is updated quarterly, but some of the feedback on the Facebook post was which numbers are those? Are they actual wineries that produce wine in a facility? Are they resale shops? Are they wine bars? So that information I was unable to attain to try to get some clarification on that. I just got the number of 1,021 bonded wine producers as of January 8th, 2025.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's when you hear that kind of number, you think, wow, there's a lot. But when you realize actually how many, again, back to wineries and tasting rooms are, it's a lot less than that.
It's a lot less than that.
And so that's why, I only list 525. Mm-hmm. And most of that is based on either having visited those places and knowing what they are or from other people's information. And the problem was the winery G permits. So, for instance, I was looking years ago about thinking about selling some wine on the website. From whoever needed to sell wine. Well, in order to do that, I needed a cheap permit. So I'm certainly not a winery or a tasting room. So it's right? Like, why would you count me? So yeah, that's okay. The permits are just not a good way.
Okay. So, well, I guess we'll have to just kind of accept what the numbers are being put out by the TTB. And since 2017, as the numbers have come all the way up to 2025 now, it seems like we've had an average growth, whatever we want to call it, wineries, wine tasting rooms, or just G permits. It's about 55.5 producers per year on average that we are getting in the state of Texas. So whatever that number in terms of actual wineries, it seems like we're still kind of we're growing.
Definitely growing.
We're definitely growing. So, and that's exciting, to know that, we're getting more wineries that's coming online. A lot of nice tasting rooms that we've been to, and, hopefully the growth continues. Hopefully the planting of the vineyards, continues to help support, the wineries. There is a little bit of mixed, views on, do we have enough vineyards and grapes to supply the wineries that we have on hand? So there's some mixed views. Do you have any thoughts on that?
No, I've heard the same thing though.
Okay.
You hear from the grower side that we have enough now, and then you hear from the winery side that may produce a lot of Texas wine, it's no, there's not enough. It's especially in those years that we occasionally have, which are not good producing years, then right. We need fruit.
And then when we do need fruit in some of those years, there's none to be had. But in other years, if we have a great growing season, then we have an abundance of fruit. I have heard some stories of some of the farmers having to drop fruit and just essentially leave it out there because there was no one able to pick it up for whatever reason, either financial or just don't have the capacity or the space to produce the wine. But it just feels like on the outside looking in that's kind of a shame that we're hungry for the fruit when we need it, but when we have it, we're not able to pick it up for whatever reason.
Yeah, I've heard that exact same thing.
All right, so let's go ahead and move on to another segment of this episode. Here in the last year or two, we've been having a few different types of acquisitions, a couple remodels, expansions, and transitions of some wineries. Some to mention are Llano Estacado, Coleman Cellars, Wine for the People, Vinovium, and now Adelfo Cellars in Lubbock. It's exciting to see certain moves happen, like getting to bigger space to expand their operations. It's less exciting to see some of our favorite wineries move on into a different space to, make their situation happen. What do you think about some of the recent acquisitions that have been mentioned? I know you were the first to break the story on Llano Estacado's new acquisition out of Lubbock and their vision for that winery moving forward. What can you share with us on the latest moving and shaking of Llano Estacado?
Well, yeah, I enjoyed the idea when I first heard it, because I've been up in the winery's tasting room, and they always have these wines that you just can't find anywhere except that tasting room. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, a lot of people think, when they think Llano Estacado, they're thinking about the wines they see in the grocery stores.
I see.
But there's a lot more than that, and there's some incredible wines.
Okay.
So I was kind of excited when I heard this, because that way other people, by going direct to consumer and more, they're going to be able to find those wines and realize, Texas makes some excellent wines here. So, yeah, I mean, they're planning first on opening a tasting room in Lubbock, in another location, and sort of the downtown area near the college. And that'll be opening up, I think I heard, last about April or so.
Okay.
And, of course, the winery's still going to be open. But then they're looking to opening a tasting room in Fredericksburg very soon after that.
Okay.
And then probably in a year or two, another actual place in Fredericksburg that they're going to be building. So it's sounding really exciting. And
Yeah. What do you think about another winery's movement? We have Vinovium. They do a lot of different things out there, but I know one of their big events was the Texas Wine Jam. I know they're moving in downtown Johnson City now. Daniel Collot has been on socials, kind of keeping everybody updated on what's going on, which I think is very cool of him to kind of let us know, what's going on, what some of the timelines are. I'm interested to know what happens to the Texas Wine Jam, now that it's going to be there in downtown Johnson City. What do you think about that move, and what are you expecting from Vinovium, if you know anything about that?
Well, from what I heard from Daniel, is it just looking for a smaller place?
Okay.
So it kind of worked out well that they were able to get that space. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So the existing Vinovium, that'll be closing down, I think, March.
March.
Mm-hmm. And then totally in Johnson City, which makes it nice and convenient. Downtown.
I like that downtown area, Johnson City.
Very nice.
I've been there, a few times. We got Tatum Cellars down there with Josh Fritchie in his wine tasting room. He does some great wines. He's helping, Ron Yates out there at his place, and he has his own brand. So it looks like some things are starting to kind of take shape out there in Johnson City. That's pretty exciting. We did hear of a recent closure of Wine for the People there in Fredericksburg, which was pretty surprising. That tasting room and that location I thought was fantastic. They did a little bit of a remodel over there. So they're moving on to kind of begin, their show on the road. Ray Wilson, I thought, that tasting room was excellently done. And I'm still excited about what she has in mind, because her wines are fantastic, and her energy and her passion for bringing wine to the people, I think, are awesome. Can you speak to that movement? How do you feel about them, moving out of that space and taking her show on the road?
Yeah, I learned just when everybody else did.
Okay.
So, yeah, haven't had a chance to talk to Ray. But.
Okay. Yeah, we'll keep our eyes and ears open to see what Ray Wilson's gonna do, and definitely continue to listen in on socials whenever she has a post about where they're going to be doing their pop-ups. I think is what she's going to be doing. And if you haven't tasted Ray Wilson's wines and got a chance to meet or talk to her, it is absolutely a must. She's fantastic, and she's an awesome human being doing some great things, with the winery. And last but not least, we did hear of Adelfo Cellars opening up a new tasting room there in Lubbock. I got a chance to peruse their website. I'm generally always on their website looking for the different events, but what I saw on their website, that facility looks like it's going to be fantastic. I'm excited to get a chance to go up there and look around and maybe stop in there for a tasting and get a chance to talk to the folks over there. So any thoughts about Adelfo's coming online with their new tasting room? I think they're moving from a smaller venue to now this larger space.
Yeah, actually, their tastings that they previously did were actually in the production room.
Oh, okay, okay.
So, this is very exciting. I'm excited to get up there and see it. I saw pictures, year and a half ago or whenever it was, of this is what they expect it to be, kind of artist concepts.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all. It'll be nice to see the final thing. And they're doing soft openings now.
Okay, fantastic. Well, looking forward to that. Let's jump on over to wine judging, Jeff. We've run into each other many times on the trail of judging wine from, I know you've done some stuff in Houston. We've been in North Texas. We also been here in San Antonio. We had the opportunity to taste on some of the same panels and just some of these fantastic wines. What can you tell our listeners about the process of wine judging? I think when I tell people that, I judge wine, that's a wine competition there. Oh, that's pretty cool, which it is cool, but I don't think they realize the type of concentration, the long day, the amount of wines that we taste to judge these wines accurately and fairly. What do you think about the wine judging arena that we're in, and give us maybe our listeners a little bit behind the scenes look at what it requires of us?
Well, let's say, so I've been judging wine competitions for over 10 years now. And what you're saying is, I've got the same reaction, like, oh, that's great. And then you must not be able to walk at the end. It's like, no, you can't drink it. You're just tasting and spitting.
Exactly.
It's spitting. If you don't spit out, you're not going to make it out of there.
But, right.
So I'm not really sure why I actually enjoy tasting over 100 wines a day and then spitting it all out. It seems to defeat the purpose personally.
Right.
But I just think it's fun tasting new wine varietals that you've never had before. Mm-hmm. Learning new grapes even that, were used to make those wines.
Sure.
And then actually at the end, I like when the results finally come out, you get to see, oh, that's the wines. This producer's really making good wine. So it's another way to I want to go visit these, this winery.
Sure. Now you, I know once, you said you've been judging, for over 10 years, here recently over the last couple of years, there's been some new technology that's come online with, a couple of the wineries. Do you like the new technology via iPad, as we can judge these wines and punch in our scores, and it's almost like instantly the scores are updated amongst our panel on the table, as opposed to writing down your scores on a sheet of paper and then handing them all in like a Scantron of sorts back in the day? Do you like the new technology that we've that's come online with our wine judging? What's your point of view on that?
So I do enjoy the technology. When it first came out, there were some issues. It wasn't as easy. Mm-hmm. But the different wine competitions I've been in that have used that, they're using it differently. So it's nice that the software can be configured to how that wine competition wants. For instance, at the very beginning, when I first started judging, wine competitions would say, okay, just judge this wine. Of course, you always judge it on its own. You don't judge it among other wines that might be in that flight. And then you give what should be the medal for that wine? Bronze, silver, gold. And then suddenly wine companies started, let's make this a little more complicated for you. Give us numbers for different categories, clarity and aroma and balance and stuff like that.
Right.
And then at the end, you totaled up and that's your score. And so lately with that technology, I've seen one that still used the numbers test system, but then another one that went back to using it just to give us the medal. So personally, I prefer just the medal.
Okay.
Okay. If they continue to do that, that'd be fantastic. And with the technology, it does make it a lot easier to enter, which hopefully makes it a lot easier to get your results, especially at the end of the day. So they'll let you go, you know, instead of having to sit around there waiting for people to manually tabulate this stuff.
Right. That's a whole process in itself. And I think, you know, particularly here in San Antonio, there's, you know, well, I think that, you know, of all the judges, but I'm more familiar with here in San Antonio, Stock Show and Rodeo Wine Competition, that that particular group or that department, they're very meticulous about, you know, tabulating the scores and making it accurate and doing all the things that's going to make those wines shine in terms of getting their awards and who's very deserving of some of those things. Are there any, as we're judging those 100 wines, 125 wines per day, are there any rituals or traditions or repetitions that you do to kind of get you zoned in to be as accurate and consistent with your judging throughout the day?
So I might do it a little different than other people.
Okay.
So what? Like I said, I've only been drinking wine seriously for like 15 years here. So
only 15 years.
Well, it's not like, you know, I grew up with wine on the table, like I hear a lot of people.
Okay.
You know, but you know, one of the first things I was taught at how to actually drink wine and start off is you take like a first sip, swish it around your mouth, and that like cleanses out your mouth to get rid of whatever might have been in there previously. Mm-hmm. And then the next sip you taste is going to be the actual taste of the wine. So when I do the wine judging, it's not the greatest because I'm probably doing 200 in a day.
Yeah.
But I like making sure my mouth is fresh.
Sure.
So that I get that next one. And okay, this is the wine I'm judging now.
Gotcha. So. Yeah, I try to. It's different from, you know, different competitions that I go to. But what I do find myself doing is I focus on a spot in the room, the ceiling, the wall or window or whatever it is. And when I take that sip of wine, I look at that same spot in order to have me focused in. And then as I'm trying to think about what I'm tasting with that wine, as we're swishing, as we're trying to figure out, you know, the different properties of the wine, that kind of gets me locked in. And then I just try to do that consistently throughout the day. It seems like it's very mundane, but it helps me to kind of calibrate my own palate to that particular focus point, and that helps me kind of get through the day. And it is fun, but you better not be drinking.
Yeah.
But it's kind of tough because, you know, we get some wines, you know, that are, you get a chance to judge the Cabernets ranging from $79 to $99 in price point, or you know, some very, very high end wines, and you kind of don't want to spit those out, but we know, and you have to be professional and, you know, spit those out. So, we won't be feeling a little bit dizzy, toward the end of the day. Is that a little bit difficult for you too?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're kind of hoping that you might get some of those wines just before lunch so that you can maybe drink a little bit and then eat lunch.
Yeah, that's a good point. You want to get a good wine or a good flight of wines right before lunch, so you can partake a little bit and then have a good lunch. Is there any particular grape varietals that you like or some that you don't like, and if it comes across your judging panel, you're like, oh man, I don't like Pinot Grigio or whatever it is, you know? Is there anything that kind of you don't like to see come across your flight?
The only thing I could think of that, because as a judge, of course, as you know, you have to drink everything.
Yes.
So,
yep.
So, I've gotten kind of used to understanding and appreciating all the different types of wines. I think the only category I ever see that comes across is maybe like, I don't know, other or other sweet, something like that, which could be anything.
Yes.
I mean, whether it's a jalapeno wine, a tomato wine, even, you know,
right,
that type of stuff. So.
Those are hard to, they're harder to judge, but we do seem to, you know, get in our zone and we judge them fairly on what there are against their other counterparts in that particular flight. You know, some are a little bit more challenging than others, and they're also challenging wines within a certain grape variety. There can be some challenging Cabernet Sauvignons. There can be some challenging Tempranillos that we get across a panel that, so it's not just those other wines. It can be some challenging wines as well.
Like this year or last year, at the competition was the first time, you know, we had these five new Walker varieties that came out.
Yes, sir.
And now we're starting to see some wines from them. So like last year at a competition, we got a Passante Noir. Mm-hmm. And we're all, you know, five judges are looking at each other. Well, have you had one of these before? Like, no, you know, it's brand new.
So
we're trying to like figure out what should it taste like, or, you know. And at that point, then that's when you go and you judge it, you know, on the characteristics, you know, like taste, aroma, and the balance, you know, the winemaking itself.
And, you know, that's a great point, Jeff. Thanks for bringing that up. I think those new grape varietals, those Walker varietals that are coming online, particularly here in Texas for us, because we have a challenging growing season in terms of temperature, in terms of weather. I'm anxious and excited to see how that's going to kind of move into the forefront or the mainstream of what some of the wineries are producing and what some of the vineyard managers and grape growers are wanting to grow. So I think that's exciting. Are you looking forward to that as well?
Oh, yeah. I mean, especially for the wineries that are in the southeast or east. You know, they're in the past have only had, like, Blanc de Blanc and Le Noir.
Right.
So, yeah, this will give them, you know, five more that they can actually have.
Yeah, we're probably looking at probably another, you know, 4 to 6 years before – they really start producing enough to start getting that following of sorts in some of the mainstream wineries and things like that. I hope some of our you know, wineries across the state take on those varietals and so they can be promoted and get a chance to be put on front stage in different wine competitions. We had here recently, San Francisco Wine Chronicle. We're talking about the wine judging. We've had some competitions like San Francisco. We also, you know, Houston's one of the bigger ones in the state. San Antonio's just pretty good size, and we also have North Texas in that area. But a lot of our Texas wines have been really taking home some big awards. Are you surprised? Are you not surprised of how well Texas wines are doing on these big stages in some of these competitions?
No, I'm not surprised at all.
Not surprised at all. No. Cool.
I mean, for the 15 years I've been doing this, the quality has been exponential. I mean, it's been phenomenal. And, yeah, we're just making great wines. The point is making people realize that, well, first of all, that still, yeah, Texas does make wine.
Yep.
And then, yeah, we make some pretty good wine.
Yes, yes.
The San Francisco Chronicle wine competition you just mentioned, one of my followers actually did looked at all the results and discovered that out of all the states that won awards, Texas was actually the second most awarded state after California. So that was pretty impressive, you know, compared to Oregon, Washington, and New York and those other ones.
That's great feedback. And we had some of the usual suspects that won some best in class awards. We had Perdinal Cellars and Becker Vineyards draw down a couple of the big awards. Congratulations to those guys. They're pretty consistent. They make very good wines year in and year out. You know, Julie Colt and those guys over there and the Beckers. So it's a lot of fun to see how we compare on the big stage of some of these big competitions.
And by the way, if you ever want to see all the Texas winery results from those wine competitions, just go to the website.
There you go.
That's the only thing I've been doing all these years is taking all the results and filtering out just the Texas winery results.
Okay.
So we have those are all scattered throughout the website. We have a page now that lists all of them that I have. And so it makes it easier to go see, okay, how is Texas doing within Texas?
Okay. Now, is there some type of archive situation where you've posted some of the results in the past, obviously. Do those just kind of fall off the website and they're unattainable anymore? Are they go back long enough where we can say, I want to go back and see what happened in 21 compared to what happened in 25 or whatever. Is there a situation like that on
yeah,
the site?
Yeah. So they're all still on the website.
Okay.
And like I said, I think it was last year I created a page that lists all the wine competition results that I've done. So you can actually see, like, okay, for Houston Rodeo, here's the ones from whatever the years are. So you can do that comparison, like you just said.
Okay. Well, that's pretty cool. That doesn't go away. How about events, Jeff? Like I said, we've met up at a couple events particularly some of the large ones like the Fredericksburg Food and Wine Festival that just happened. This, I think it was in October, was it? I thought it was a pretty good event. There was a lot of people out there. Weather was beautiful. A lot of people participating, a lot of good food and stuff out there. What has been your experience in some of those wine festivals, or are there any suggestions about any of the big wine events that you can share with our listeners?
Yeah, wine festivals are always fun. And back when I started doing all this, it was always so fun, you know, volunteering and then, you know, helping wineries pour. That way you get to meet the other winery owners and representatives.
Okay.
Some of the like big ones that are actually ones coming up in April is Rootstock. That's up in Waco. Mm-hmm. That's always good because it's just Texas wines only. Last year they had a theme of sparkling wines. This year's theme is with grapes primarily from Spain or Portugal. So we'll get to taste those type of wines.
Yeah, that's awesome. I was there at Rootstock last year. It rained pretty hard on us on that particular event, but it still was a great turnout. They were prepared though. They, you know, it was supposed to be indoor outdoor, and they had already made the adjustments and moved us all inside, and it was just like a plug and play situation. They really did a good job and kind of, you know, was doing some forward thinking. Hey, if the weather turns foul, then we can adjust and move indoors. And I thought that was a good move. There were some very good sparkling wines there that I enjoyed. Some that surprised me. Some wineries that I didn't even know that they were making sparkling, which was pretty exciting. But I got a chance to meet and speak with Elisa Christopher over at Elisa Christopher Wine. She had her sparkling out there, which is always pretty tasty. And she took the time to speak with us on the Texas wine scene. I love the focus of that event. And you're saying we're going to do some type of focus this year as well. I was unaware of that, but thanks for sharing that. So I'm looking forward to that type of event.
If you like wine festivals, by the way, just a little plug.
Yeah.
On Texas Wine Lover website, we have a list of all the Texas wine festivals throughout the year. So if you see any that's missing, let me know, or, you know, I'll add those, or some haven't announced their dates yet. But
okay.
I've given guesses as far as when I think it is, but as they get updated, then I update the page.
Okay. I would encourage everybody out there to definitely take a peek at the Texas Wine Lover app and also the Texas Wine Lover, the website for those events. It's comprehensive. There's everything on there that you need to get to your next wine event, to participate in these events and support these Texas wineries are out there. You know, blood, sweat, and tears to bring you this fantastic beverage to the table. So definitely get out there, go onto the site and pull that information down and get out there and support some of these great wineries. Jeff, have you ever been up to Grape Fest in Grapevine?
No, I personally have kind of avoided Grape Fest.
Okay. Well, that's fair.
I've heard it's like really crowded and people are there just to get drink wine.
Okay.
Instead of like learning about the wine.
Well, I've had the opportunity to participate in that event. I enjoyed it. But what was different about what you said, there were slots and there were time slots that you can purchase specifically for that time period. And you can go there and the amount of people at those times are a lot less. But when it opens up, yes, there's a lot of people doing some partying, but they're having a good time tasting some wines and some people go for the tasting, some people go for the drinking, but you know, that's okay. Hey, they're all participating in the event and supporting the Texas wineries. And at the end of the day, that's definitely what I love. Is there anything else, Jeff, before we begin to wrap up this episode and this interview that you want to share with our listeners about your experience in the wine industry, where we're moving, where we're going forward, or just anything you want to share that that you want us to know about?
We just talked about events and wine festivals, but like other type of events that you see occasionally that are worth going to actually learn more about wine and actually taste some good wines, or for instance, like the Texas Wine Auction that's coming up April 26th. That's an event that's always good to go for, worthy for a good cause. And, you know, if you watch those for those type of events, you'll see those announced either in social media or, you know, I'll have a blog post for them. But those are always good to attend to.
That's a fantastic idea. And that's great information. That wine auction, I haven't had the opportunity to go yet. My schedule didn't line up with the wine auction, but I'm definitely looking forward to this next one coming up. Definitely for a good cause. Based on some of the social media feedback I get from industry leaders and some of the people who have attended the events, they tell me a lot of good things about the auction. I've been asked to help, work the auction this upcoming year. I may, jump in and do that so I can get a little bit of behind the scenes and look at, you know, how that all works. But, it is definitely one, to attend. So we encourage all of our listeners out there to take a peek at that one and see if you can get out there and enjoy that.
Yeah, another event coming up, in April, actually, it's kind of exciting, is there's an organization called Rhone Rangers that is primarily putting the spotlight on domestically produced Rhone variety wines.
Okay.
They have like over 100 member wineries throughout the U.S. that includes California, Washington, Oregon, Texas. So they're coming in April for the first time, and there's going to be like a consumer seminar that's actually at Halter Ranch. And so there'll be Texas wines that are tasted there.
Okay.
And then there's going to be that same day, there's going to be a grand tasting, I think 30 plus wineries at William Crisp Vineyards down the street.
Wow, very nice.
So I think there's a couple other events happening. There's going to be more information coming out of that about that. But that's kind of exciting to see now. Okay, it's not just Texas. Now we're seeing other states realizing Texas has wine, and let's get them involved. Mm-hmm. And so this will be a good event.
That's great. Which leads me into our last question of the day. What do you say to people who are still on the fence about drinking Texas wine?
Why?
I love it. Yeah. Why?
Just try it. You could get rid of that stigma of whatever you heard, 15, 20 years ago, mm-hmm. and try some Texas wine and realize, oh, this stuff's not too bad.
You got to try it. You got to be open-minded. You gotta, you put yourself out there in an open-minded zone of things and, give it an opportunity because there's so much different wine out there. There's so many different varietals. You just mentioned earlier that we have walkover varietals coming online that not a whole lot of people know about. It continues to evolve. This industry continues to evolve. To have the mindset that you only drink from one region, you're probably cutting out 90% of the other regions and the other wine varietals that are out there. So, I love that answer. Why? I love it. So that would do it for, this episode. Jeff, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on here to Texas Wine Scene and give us a, insider's view on what's going on in the Texas wine industry. And, I hope we can do this again sometime here in the future as we continue to move throughout the year and a lot of these events start to build up and start to happen. Hopefully we can get together again and chit-chat and maybe even do a wrap-up this year, see if we can catch up and do a wrap-up this year about what we've seen here in the past. So that'll do it, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us here in the Texas Wine Scene. I'm your host, your Texas Wine Scene correspondent, Mike Cole, and I look forward to seeing you next time here on Texas Wine.